Our next guest is probably even more sick of this song than the rest of us are. He had to hear it 75 straight days when he was appearing on Jeopardy, not to mention all the time he had to watch Jeopardy preparing to be on Jeopardy. Stop it right there. Stop. 2 more seconds and I owe Merv Griffin $5. Please, he gets a royalty every time we play that thing, so knock it off. Ken Jennings is on the phone with us. He's the guy who won $2.5 million on Jeopardy. None of it from the royalties from the song, but he'll be making royalties off of his brand new book, which just hit the stores this week, Brainiac, Adventures in the Curious, Competitive, Compulsive World of Trivia Buffs. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
It is a pleasure having you on the show, and I got to start by congratulating you, not on winning the money, but on not blowing the money.
Not yet, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's been how long now?
Almost 2 years since I lost.
And you still haven't blown the money on a giant house or cars or bought everybody you knew a steak dinner? None of that, right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure I bought somebody a steak dinner, but no, we've tried to be pretty careful with the money and not, you know, suddenly spend it all on crazy stuff. No sports cars or, you know, anything.
Well, good. I emailed Ken a few months ago when he started up his blog and said that I was enjoying it and I was looking forward to having him on the show here. And about a week later, he posted something on the blog that caused a little bit of controversy and also probably brought several hundred thousand more people to reading his blog. The controversy was about what was obviously a joke, except to the people at USA Today. He wrote on the blog a kind of open letter to Jeopardy about things that needed to be changed, and he went through several points and then said, finally, Alex. I know, the old folks love him. Nobody knows he died in that fiery truck crash a few years back and was immediately replaced with the Trebektron 4000. I see your engineer still can't get the mustache right, by the way. But that's beside the point. Alex is the franchise. You can't just bring in Ryan Seacrest without warning. More's the pity. But I think a few little host tweaks would do a lot of good. And then you went on to tweak him yourself a little bit. What was the blowback from that, Ken?
Oh, it wasn't all that bad. I got some angry letters from fairly clueless people, mostly people who hadn't read the original blog entry, but who had read, you know, a bad summary of it in People magazine or something. But, you know, obviously the intent was to list silly, bad suggestions, you know, things that would not be good ideas to add to a game show. I suggested killer bees, for example, or Alex should hold a ventriloquist dummy. None of those suggestions were remotely serious. I'm a huge fan of Jeopardy, and you know, it's pretty ironic that, you know, someone like me who has loved the show for 20 years, you know, was getting hate mail for not being a big enough fan.
Yeah, no, it was classic the way people were angry at you, not understanding how funny you actually are and how funny you were that day. Although I do have to pull rank on you because I've been a Jeopardy fan longer than you. In fact, my mom was on the show.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
1967, she was a 4-day champion and would have come back for the 5th day if she knew what the T in Booker T. Washington stands for. Ken, before you answer, anybody in the studio know?
Not a clue.
Thomas.
You'd guess Thomas, Theodore, Timothy, something like that.
Trebek.
Ken, what does the T in Booker T. Washington stand for?
It looks like Taliaferro, but it's pronounced Tolliver.
That's exactly right. And my mom didn't know that, and she went home with a lot less money than you. She won $1,950, which in those days was pretty good money.
Absolutely.
Because the amounts on the screen were like 10, 20, 30, 40,
right,
50.
Right.
And we got Compton's pictured encyclopedia, which my mom still has in my old bedroom at home.
That's great.
That's quite a haul.
Yeah. So who talked you into going on Jeopardy in the first place?
Nobody really had to talk me into it. I had been a fan since I was a kid. In Brainiac, I tell the story of growing up overseas where there was really only one TV channel to watch, you know, because we lived in Korea. And so all my friends watched Jeopardy because that was what was on right after school. So I grew up thinking that, like, people on Jeopardy were actually cool, you know, which is pretty far from what most people think, I know.
Yeah.
And so I actually had to talk a friend into driving down to L.A. to try out with me. But we both passed the test, and I later lucked into making it on the show, I guess.
Made it on the show and kept making it on the show and kept having to fly from Salt Lake City to L.A. And here is the other amazing thing. Not only the first thing I mentioned, which you didn't blow the money, but that you didn't blow the secret.
That was killing me. Like, I thought I was going to make me schizophrenic keeping that secret for 4 months because the show's taped long in advance.
Right. Months go by, and you had to keep the secret. And as your run kept going on and on and on, there must have been people who were suspicious. Why is Ken not here every Tuesday?
Yeah, if you think computer programmers are smart, you know, nobody ever caught on at work, so consider that for a second.
Did they just think you were a slacker?
I don't know. My boss did know, and she gave very good cover stories. You know, in Brainiac, I describe her telling everybody that, oh, well, Ken's painting his basement today, or Ken's son is sick today, or whatever. And so nobody really clued into the fact that I was gone, like, you know, every Tuesday and Wednesday for, like, six straight weeks.
Did anybody on the plane ever ask you a question and have you almost slip up? You know, like the guy sitting next to you. Hey, hi, my name's Ron. What's your name? Oh, my name's Ken. Okay, well, Ken, what do you do for a living? what are you doing in L.A.? What are you heading to L.A. for? Did that ever slip you up at all?
Yeah, there's actually a story quite a bit like that in Brainiac where I just start telling people, oh, I sort of have a part-time job there this month, which is funny. It did start to feel like a summer job, you know, being on Jeopardy 10 times a week.
Talking with Ken Jennings, the greatest champion in Jeopardy history. You know he was because it says it right on the book cover. The book is called Brainiac. And the other thing that impressed me about you was the fact that you were able to come up with an anecdote for Alex Trebek, 75 different anecdotes for 75 different days. How tough was that?
You know, after the third day, I thought I had run out of material. You know, I watch the old tapes, and I just cringe at how terrible some of these stories are, you know. Ken, it says here that you like airplane food. I sort of like airplane food. Like you can't tell I put that together on the plane here, you know?
So you had to come up with an anecdote for their, what, screeners ahead of time?
Yeah, exactly. 75 anecdotes, in fact.
At what point did the people who worked on Jeopardy start to treat you as kind of like their homegrown star? Because before you, the reason you were able to do 75 days is because they changed the rules, right?
Yes. That's right. They used to kick people off, give them a Porsche after 5 days.
And you were the first one to have the real extended run and still hold the record for the longest run on Jeopardy. So at a certain point, did you become part of their family at the Jeopardy studio?
I sure felt like it. You know, I felt very sad when I lost because I, you know, couldn't go to the Sony studio and hang out anymore. But really, they make every effort just to treat everybody exactly the same. They're still laws on the books from the 1950s scandals making it a felony to rig a game show. So you would not believe the security on Jeopardy. In Brainiac, I describe, you know, how all the contestants have to go to the bathroom at the same time because you're not allowed to be separated from your fellow contestants. So they were very careful not to treat me differently at all.
Would you tell one story from the book, if you don't mind, the one about the tie.
Right. That's the time the security was probably tightest. I wore a tie that didn't read on camera and was, you know, rushed upstage to quickly change my tie before the show started. And I actually ended up changing my tie at the mirror that Alex Trebek uses. And all hell broke loose. That turned out to be a massive security violation, you know, on the level of the Pentagon Papers or something.
Because you were taken into an area of the set where no contestant shall ever go.
I was using a mirror that no contestant shall ever use.
Wow. And so did they have to shut things down? And what were they afraid of?
I think the idea is just the appearance of impropriety. You know, the other contestants see one contestant, you know, doing something different, and they think, wait, what's going on here? They're giving him the answers back there.
Yeah. What did other contestants say to you? As this went along, they were aware of what you were doing, right?
Well, you know, often they would find out when they got to the studio. You know, they think they're going to win, and all of a sudden, hey, here's the 38-game champion or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually they were nice. You know, I feel like, you know, people would be friendly at least before the games. Afterwards was sort of a different story. But you know, people were generally good sports. I was the one, I just felt terribly guilty, you know, because for all these people, it's a lifelong dream to be on the show. And then, you know, I personally shatter it for 150 people in a row.
Oh, come on. You enjoyed crushing their dreams, Ken?
No, actually, I felt pretty bad. I mean, not bad enough to actually lose on purpose.
Did you ever entertain that thought? All right, I get to 2 million, I'm tanking. I'm going to say, what is Venezuela for every question?
I was sort of thinking game 100, I might tank it in the final question, you know, because it was getting crazy. I had to get done with it somehow.
Speaking of Final Jeopardy, I wrote about this on my blog. This was the worst Final Jeopardy ever. In fact, we were sitting here in the studio, and, you know, Jeopardy comes on at 3:30 in the afternoon here in St. Louis. Be on in just a few minutes for those who want to tune away from Ken Jennings, the Jeopardy star, to watch it. But during a commercial break, I looked over, and my engineer had it on one of the many TVs we have here in the studio. And, Ken, I'm not making this up. This was the answer in Final Jeopardy. Of all the states that have two NFL teams, it is the only one that touches the Mississippi River. Now, there are only a certain number of cities large enough on the Mississippi River to even be considered NFL cities. And two of the people who were on there, not very knowledgeable about their NFL geography, said Minnesota. Okay, it's not a horrible guess. It's wrong. The answer, of course, is Missouri, with St. Louis Rams and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
But it's the third contestant who had a real beauty That contestant answered, "What is Florida?"
Oh.
Now, you're the Jeopardy champ. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Florida, Mississippi River, not near each other.
As far as I know, no, not too close.
And by the way, Florida has three NFL teams.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Oh, that's right. Jacksonville, Miami, and
Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay, there you go.
So were there moments like that on the show where people would give incredibly stupid answers? And what causes that? These are supposed to be really smart people.
I've done it myself. I can cop to it myself. You know, it's just a matter. In my case, it was sort of fatigue. You know, you play five of those games a day because Jeopardy does tape a week's worth of shows in one afternoon. And, you know, your brain just freezes up. Plus, you got the cameras and the lights. You're not really at your best. It's not like shouting out answers from your couch, you know?
Is it how much more difficult is it, though, for you after 30, 40, 50 shows? It becomes then that is your couch.
Yeah, that really helps. So that's my advice. If you can arrange to be on a game show 70 times, it gets a lot more routine towards the end.
And you also became much more proficient with the buzzer than anybody else.
Yeah, Brainiac gives secrets about the tricky Jeopardy buzzer, because often, you know, it's not what you know, it's how good is your timing with your thumb. And a lot of people don't realize that. They watch the show and they think, wow, those other two don't know anything. And frankly, the other two are probably just as good. It's just a matter of, you know, who has figured out the timing on the buzzer. Most people buzz too early and lock themselves out.
And the timing is really knowing Alex Trebek's cadence, isn't it?
That's right. You wait for Alex to say the very last word, you wait a single beat, like a single syllable, and then you buzz like your life depended on it.
Do you think in your 75 shows that they... The Jeopardy people. I know they couldn't rig anything and they would never cop to this, but do you think that they realized this guy's good for the ratings? We have to choose contestants to go up against him. Let's choose people who we know he is going to wipe the floor with.
I don't know about that. Like, the only impression I got sort of went the other way, like that they were worried about having so many blowout games that they made sure that they started to make sure that the challengers got way more practice with the buzzer than they used to. They even changed the guy who arms the buzzer, so the timing would be a little different. It seems like they were actually worried that they would never be able to get rid of me.
Really? You think they were rigging it against you? Is that what you're saying here, Ken?
I don't know if they're. I don't want to say that they're rigging it, because then I'll be.
Are we trying to make some headlines for you?
Yeah, that'd be great. Just like when I said Alex was a robot.
Women on the show, obviously not as many women, but they rarely do as well as the men. Why is that?
I talk about that in Brainiac because you notice it immediately on Jeopardy. You know, the women probably tried out like a month ago, and the men probably tried out a year ago because that's how bad the shortage is for them. I think it's not the trivia angle. I think you know, women love trivia and know trivia just as much as men do. I think it's a lot of it's the competitive thing. You know, that phallic little buzzer, you know, hammering up and down on it. You know, it's a macho thing, and maybe men are more into the competition angle than their female counterparts. I don't know.
Yeah, let me ask Carol. Carol, why is it that women aren't into trivia as much as men are? Because I'll tell you, I go and I do a lot of trivia nights. I've hosted a lot of trivia nights. I've taken part in a couple. And it is at those kind of things, because maybe it's a more social occasion, there are a lot more women there than men.
Right.
I've never, and I am not into trivia.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know if it has to do with my gender or just that the nurturing side of me, the nurturing side of women, is more concerned with emotional issues.
Mm-hmm.
Is it sounding good?
Yeah.
Am I going anywhere with this?
Than
factual issues, than who was the engineer who first designed what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I know that engineer had two kids. And that he wanted pizza for dinner on Thursdays. You know, I don't know. I really don't know.
And so rather than knowing a lot of trivial information that would get you on Jeopardy, you're going to be the one who's there consoling the one that Ken has beaten.
No. Ken, are you married?
I actually am. We have a kid and another one on the way.
So there you go. That she's the one who's at home and saying, bring home the $2.5 million.
Yeah.
I have no idea to that answer, but even in our newsroom, we do have one trivia buff who is a woman in our newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the trivia, the guys are just constantly, and I'm just rolling my eyes.
Has that been your experience, Ken? Is Mindy, your wife, into trivia like you are?
Not to the same degree, but she's a pretty strong trivia player. Like, Trivial Pursuit games will often be pretty close at our house. So
wow.
I think she's pretty decent.
Talking with Ken Jennings, the guy who won $2.5 million on Jeopardy and writes about that experience in a new book that's just out this week called Brainiac, Adventures in the Curious, Competitive, Compulsive World of Trivia Buffs. Here's a guy who knows about trivia and has himself become an answer to a trivia question. Pretty cool, Ken.
Yeah, I mean, for someone who's into trivia, that's like the Holy Grail. You know, that's as good as you can get. I could be on the back of a Trivial Pursuit card someday.
Yeah, now, I've heard people give all sorts of definitions of you, or I guess descriptions of you, including Slate Magazine, which I like this one, the Seabiscuit of geekdom.
Oh, my.
But on the other hand, ESPN's magazine called you smarmy and punchable with the personality of a hall monitor.
I remember that.
Now, both of those have such negative connotations. One, of course, would be, you know, if you're smart, that's bad in this country. I hate that way of thinking. The other part is the word geek. Do you take being called a geek as a compliment?
I think in, like, high school, it would have rubbed me wrong, you know. Oh, I'm not a nerd or a geek. What are you talking about? You know, I tended to just be a little more in the trivia closet back then. But now that I've been outed on Jeopardy, I can't really argue with being called a geek or a nerd. I mean, there's a sense in which, you know, in America today, the geek sort of won, you know. The blockbuster movies are all about hobbits and Harry Potter and superheroes and stuff. And, you know, the millionaires are all internet nerds now. And there's a sense in which there's really no stigma in being a nerd anymore.
Well, you know, I have a theory, Ken, that everybody on the planet, no matter how cool they are, is a geek about something. I mean, Brad Pitt is a geek about something. Maybe it's about Angelina, but he's a geek about something. And I consider myself to be a sports geek. And I don't think, I mean, to me, the word geek just means something that you're really into. I don't know. Maybe I'm just the person that's got it all backwards, but everybody's geeky about something.
No, that's like I say that almost verbatim in Brainiac, that, you know, it's not like there's trivia people and non-trivia people. You know, everybody's a trivia person about something, you know. Even if you don't think of yourself, you know, as a trivia person, you could be a St. Louis Cardinals trivia fan or a Desperate Housewives trivia fan or a 007 trivia fan. Everybody nowadays, it seems like, is some kind of encyclopedic expert on whatever their particular pop culture favorite is.
But even there, you said trivia fan, not trivia geek.
Okay, I'll say geek. I'll use the G word. I'm okay with that.
Speaking of pop culture, one of the interesting things in the book is that you discuss how a lot of general knowledge outside of pop culture can be gleaned from pop culture. Like you said that you learned the flags of the world by watching the Olympics on NBC.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I would be playing Jeopardy, and I would be noticing how many of these, like, you know, supposedly highbrow, sophisticated subjects I was getting right from very lowbrow sources. You know, I'd get a mythology question right just because of all the Thor comic books I read in junior high, you know? Or I'd get a geography question right because I remember it from The Amazing Race. And in a sense, that's sort of, like, disappointing. You know, I guess I wish I were more highbrow, but...
No, I think you're more of a sponge, and I think that's an okay thing.
That's the reality of it all.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that you can learn anywhere. You know, it just shows that even if you're watching The Amazing Race, you know, if you're alert and curious, you know, part of you is probably learning something.
So you'll be watching Sunday night when season 10 kicks off?
Oh, that's right. Reality TV is the path to Jeopardy. Absolutely.
Well, you know what? It's funny. I'm the same way. I do a thing on the show every Friday called the Harris Challenge. It's been going on for years. I turned it into a couple of trivia calendars. I don't know my brother's phone number, but I know that Bolivia exports tin.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how that happened. When you were on Jeopardy, Ken, what categories, when they were revealing the categories, did you absolutely not want to see up there?
It seems like they kept going back time and time again to country music. And, you know, no offense to the country fans listening, but, you know, I'm more a little bit rock and roll. Let's put it that way. time and time again, it would be country music or hockey. They kept having hockey categories.
Uh-huh.
So anything with a mullet, I guess, I didn't want to see.
Again, this is more proof that they were rigging Jeopardy against you.
They wanted me out there, you know. More hockey.
And I would think, as a Mormon, you don't drink, so potent potables must have been a bad one, too.
It would have been, except I knew potent potables was coming. You know, I watched enough Jeopardy to be aware of potent potables. And so in the weeks leading up to my appearance, as described in Brainiac, my wife and I made flashcards, and she would quiz me on cocktail ingredients just for hours, you know. What's in a Brandy Alexander? What's in a sidecar? So that... You know, I guess if I blow all the Jeopardy money, I can go 10 bars somewhere.
Now, Ken, I'm curious. You did this incredible thing on Jeopardy, historic, but are you a member of Mensa? I mean, it's one thing to know trivia. In your mind, is it another thing to be have that kind of intelligence?
I think people get that confused a lot. You know, everyone assumes that these guys on Jeopardy must necessarily be America's most intelligent people, but... there's definitely a difference. You know, you could be a pack rat for fact without necessarily being super intelligent. There certainly does tend to be a relationship, you know. People, it seems like the more facts you know, the easier it is to learn new stuff just because you have more to connect it to and mm-hmm. more perspective on things, you know.
We'll come back in a moment here with more with Ken Jennings. You can read him online, by the way. His website is ken-jennings.com. Why is there a dash there? Why isn't it just kenjennings.com?
KenJennings.com is owned by a Florida computer programmer whose name is actually Ken Jennings. It's not like he's some cyber squatter.
Oh, he didn't grab it from you and say, all right, Mr. $2.5 million, write me a check and you can have it.
No, he's had a very minimal alt-text site up there for years, but he was not selling any of the KenJennings.domains, so I had to go with the hyphen.
Well, that's where you'll find his blog, and the book is called Brainiac, and we'll talk more about it in a moment as the Paul Harris Show continues here on News Talk 1120 KMOX.
Attention, everybody. We'd like to introduce you to someone.
Say hi to Paul Harris on News Talk 1120 KMOX.
Less than a minute now.
Tool time for 200.
This term for a long-handled gardening tool can also mean an immoral pleasure seeker. Ken.
What's a hoe?
No.
A classic moment in Ken Jennings' 75-game run on Jeopardy.
Oh, come on, Ken. You got to say something.
I think it's what is a rake. But I stand by my answer.
I think that was possibly one of the greatest answers ever.
And you were serious.
Yeah.
I can't believe they didn't take it.
Yeah. That would have been my answer.
I would have thought that at least at the table they would have had a little meeting.
I think the whole point of the question is to get someone to say, what is a hoe?
I can't believe our Mormon guest is speaking this way.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, you should read his blog. the book is called Brainiac, although it was originally supposed to be called The Smartest Man in Syndication. Did you have fights over the name of the book, Ken?
That was just the title on the pitch. The title has changed many a time. I was sort of worried that Brainiac would sound, egotistical. Like, I have such a big brain. But I guess when you think about it, it's made of brain and maniac. So it's really not that nice a thing to say. I guess I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it works out okay. And it's easy to say every time you're doing a show like this.
It's catchy.
Yeah, throw it right out there. Has Google made writing trivia questions harder or easier?
To me, it's made it easier. But I think to many people, it's so easy to find fake trivia, like false trivia on the internet nowadays, that I think a lot of bad trivia gets written. You know, you ever get these lists that get passed around with like 100 great trivia facts, but
yes,
like half of them are bogus?
Yes.
Like, it says that Donald Duck was once banned in Finland because he doesn't wear any pants, and that's a great story, but it's not true. You know?
Everybody knows that was actually Denmark.
What is Venezuela? There you go.
there you go. That's the all-purpose answer. What is Venezuela? Are you allowed to go on any other game shows now?
I sort of think it like might be a little bit like the card counter that can't go in the casino, you know? Like, I'd have to wear a disguise to try to get on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
But you must have been invited by some of these people. They're always coming up with new shows. Wouldn't it be cool for them to say, and by the way, here's our celebrity contestant, Ken Jennings?
I would love to do something like that for charity. I actually am going to appear on a new NBC show called One Versus 100, where I am among the 100. They had some ex-game show success stories among the 100 contestants who face off against their one contestant. And that was fun to meet these other Who Wants to Be a Millionaire millionaires and so on.
I'd like to invite you on the Harris Challenge sometime.
That sounds great.
Okay, all right, fine. He took up my introduction. Let's do it, Ken. Here's how the Harris Challenge works. We have five questions. We start with the one-pointer, work our way up to the five-pointer. You have 60 seconds to answer them. And when we play this on Friday afternoons, if you get 8 points or better, you win.
Oh, okay, that sounds good.
But for you, it has to be 14 points or better.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm kidding. Are you ready?
I'm going to give it a try.
Ken Jennings, let's play the Harris Challenge. Who was the first president to be inaugurated in Washington, D.C.?
Jefferson.
Correct. For 2 points, what is the largest city in the U.S. that begins with the letter F?
Fargo, North Dakota.
Fort Worth, Texas.
All right.
Three-pointer. What is Donald Duck's middle name?
Fauntleroy.
Oh, very good. Four-pointer. Name the sport in which a player uses a racket but not a ball.
Badminton.
Very good. Five-pointer. In the Peanuts comic strip, what does Charlie Brown's father do?
He's a barber.
Wow! Very good.
I guess I missed Fort Worth. I'm sorry, Fort Worth.
You got 13 points. Yeah, unfortunately, needed the 14. That's a darn... But as a lovely parting gift, we're giving you a copy of the Ken Jennings book, Brainiac.
Autographed?
I can arrange that for you.
He needs punishment music, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, normally.
We don't have any. Okay.
Well, you know what? He scored enough points that he doesn't get punished. Normally, if somebody doesn't get 8 points, we punish them with something horrible like Tiny Tim singing, Do You Think I'm Sexy? Or something like that.
Tiny Tim's actually on the cover of Brainiac, so that would be no punishment for me.
Tiny Tim is on the cover. Oh, that's right. There he is.
Little tiny picture there in the corner.
Yep. Right next to, is that Neil or Buzz on the moon there?
I think it might be Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the Harlem Globetrotter is either. I don't know.
Hey, can you mention that you're expecting a child, your second?
Yes.
And when most women are pregnant, they read to the baby. Are you reading trivia to your to your wife and to that child?
Trivia is not so good for bedtime reading. you know, there's no cliffhanger. What's going to happen tomorrow, Daddy?
Yes, but Ken, there's not much cliffhanging in Goodnight Moon either.
Absolutely.
Goodnight Venezuela. promise me one thing, Ken. You're not going to have a bizarre name for your kid. You're not going to name it Trebek Jennings.
Actually, if it was a boy, we were thinking of Alex. But now that it's a girl, I'm not a big fan of Alexis, so that might be on hold.
Good luck with the book. I know it's already in what, its third printing?
Yeah, before publication, it's already in its third printing. We're very excited.
It's been out all of 30 hours now, and it's already in its third printing, which is a good thing because Ken desperately needs money at this point. Are you still working?
I had to take some leave to write Brainiac, to do all the research, and that sort of continued. I really like not working for the white man. I like working for the
Ken Jennings, the book is Brainiac, Woo! Adventures in the Curious, Competitive, Compulsive World of Trivia Buffs. Thanks for your time. Let's do it again sometime.
It was a pleasure, you guys.
Ken Take Jennings care. Here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.